Welcome to the third podcast in a series launched by the British Texel Sheep Society to celebrate their 50 years in existence in the UK. The British Texel Sheep Society have commissioned myself and Jonathan Long to write a history book, which will be coming out later this year, which will be detailing all the milestones that went on within the breed through that 50-year period. But of course, the breed isn't just about those high-flying prices and those top breeders making those headlines. The Texel breed, of course, is very much a commercial breed, the biggest commercial breed in the UK. And in this episode, we want to focus more on the commercial angle of the Texel breed, and specifically those top breeders, those guys that are turning out big numbers of commercial tubs at the main sales like Kelso and Bilth. And I continued my chat with Gordon Gray, one of the many modern breeders who doesn't just rely on the Texel lamb market, but also runs a lot of animals around for shearlings. And I asked him for his take on the shearling market. You sell lambs, but you sell shearling tubs as well. And is it a different type of sheep, Gordon, that you would put to a shearling? Is that figure space maybe for the shearlings? Is it a different type of sheep that you would put for the lambs?
Not really, Andy. And, you know, we buy a tub, it's to do three jobs. Mm-hmm. It's to do gimmers first, shearlings, and ram lambs.
Okay.
We've never, with a very odd exception, which has turned out to be a disaster, we have never chased the lamb dream by buying the head. And I think the marketplace is changing and going away from that now. We've always had the shearling market in mind when we've been buying a tub.
Right.
And Kelso has given us, you know, although our highest prices have been at Lanark, Kelso has given us some of the biggest thrills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to go in and sell 15 to 20 or 30 shearlings. And if you're on a roll, there's nothing quite like Kelso.
Sorry.
It's one of the highlights of the Texel breed, actually, when they started off from very small beginnings with, you know, half a ring of Texels, and mm-hmm. I don't know, at that time there would be 8 or 9 rings of Suffolks. And, I mean, the whole thing's turned in its head now and has been for a number of years. Texels are by far the most popular breed in Kelso.
And you had 17,000 for a shearling, I think, Gordon, so that's a fair trade for Kelso.
Couple of years ago, with a super average that year. That'll be one of my most pleasurable experiences in a sale ring, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
At Kelso, but
and also, I think the record at Kelso at the moment is 65,000 for the Dyke Ram, and that, again, that was from your breeding.
Yeah, that was off a tub that Ettrick Cockney Rebel. We sold them, and we bought a ram that day. And unfortunately, it didn't work. And it was James Milne told us it would be totally infertile. And so it turned out. In the following years, a guy took it back and it was never fertile. Okay. However, that being the case, we needed another tub. So I approached the two purchasers of Cockney Rebel, and they agreed to sell my third share back in them.
Mm.
So we had a super day that year, but our day would have been even better if we'd come in behind Dyke, but he was last in the sale.
Okay.
And it was fantastic to see the interest in his stock.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually kept Cockney Rebel's brother for a shearling.
Okay.
And used him, Ettrick Cocky Bob. And the following year, he made 11,000 as a shearling.
Okay.
It was a good meeting.
What sort of numbers of lambs do you keep around? What percentage of your male crop do you keep round there to make shearlings? Is that pretty much the same every year?
There's 35 kept this year.
Okay.
And they're for various markets. We sell as far down south as Bentham. We've had a good trade there over the years. Carlisle, Lanark, Longtown. Quite a nice thing to have, not just relying on tup lambs anyway.
Welshman Alwyn Phillips has been involved in Texels a long time, and again, a man very much with his eye on the commercial trade.
I was on the board for 22 years,
On the board for 22 years, okay. You were very much involved in the early days of the figures, of the block figures that came in and worked with those early figures, I think, while you were there on the board. Did you influence on how they were developed there, Alwyn?
Well, the falls recording from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was chairman of the breed development committee, which is involved with developing all the breed and the performance recording. which is my main interest, really.
Yeah. Okay. And some of that early work would have been done with Aberystwyth University there. Were you involved with those?
Oh, I worked with Aberystwyth. I worked with Band University. Well, it's my interest in performance recording, and the university students come here and part of their sort of on-farm experience. And I worked with them on doing some research work on AI and genetics and performance recording.
And Orwen, as I said, you're very much commercially focused there, not chasing the pedigree market at all. And where would you sell most of your rams?
We sell them at home. Everything we do is off grass. We don't go in the show world. We don't go into creek feeding. We lamb in April. So the lambs are born into grass and they perform recorded off grass.
Okay.
We don't have any feed. And we are quite successful. We are one of the highest muscle flock in the society.
Sounds like a highly specialised operation there, Orwen. Your buyers, are they repeat customers coming back to the farm every year?
Yeah, what we do is when people make inquiries, we send them a list of all the rams for sale and all the data by EBVs and all those things.
Okay.
They know before coming, we set a price and they come here and they've seen the performance and they come here and look at the rams and they might select five or six and then a short list down to one or two and off they go.
And do you price those according to index?
We do, yeah. Most of them in 5% or 1% performance. So they do select rams, and then all of a sudden they look at the figures, and that helps them make a decision. But what they like most of all is that when they go on the farm, they thrive, and they're very fertile, and that's the feedback I get, because they've been fed on grass only.
You say just grass-fed, but that would be special grass, something a little bit more complicated than just an ordinary lay there, perhaps, Orwen?
Yeah, we're very much into soil and grass. We are part of a grass check farms in the UK, and we've been on techno-grazing. In other words, all the farms down to hectare paddocks, and we graze for 2 days and move on fresh grass, and then come back 21 days later, and we've got a very high clover content. It's important that you get the soils right. If you get the soil right, then you can grow grass.
Okay. And all your rams obviously are sold as shearlings there. And what sort of numbers of rams are you moving per year these days, Orwen?
About the 50. We can't sell much more than 50 because the market's not there at the moment, but it's been growing. And I think, as you know, the single farm payments is coming to end in 27, and then we have to think differently. When you think about New Zealand 40 years ago this year, they stopped subsidies and they've been very successful farming, relying on improving their grass quality by higher clovers and ryegrasses, and also relying on genetics. So that's where they've overcome the loss of subsidies.
And you've been involved in something called the Ram Compare project there. Just tell us a little bit more about that, Orwen, please.
Yeah, I've been there on that project for 8 years now. And in that project, they're putting high-index rams on commercial farms using commercial ewes and commercial grass. And they're recording the lambs of those ewes from birth to slaughter. And they follow the way through. And the beauty about that is that it's been there for 8 years now, so they've taken into consideration different seasons, different weather, everything comes into it, and it's based on grass production only.
Okay, and is that across all breeds?
And yeah, I supply two rams every year. There's been 568 rams, different breeds in the scheme, and they produce 44,000 lambs.
Right.
And those 44,000 lambs have been gone all the way from birth to slaughter and into eating quality. So it's one of the biggest projects there is in the country, and I've been fairly successful there with it.
Is the Texel featured at the top of this project?
Yeah, there's seven different terminal breeds there. It's a progeny test, really. In other words, when you produce a ram, it's the progeny he produces is the acid test, isn't it? So
okay.
If he's been good lambs, well, and you've got good figures, then it's serving a purpose.
And I continued with the chat that I had with Paul Quick a few weeks ago. And Paul, your father and yourself and your brothers have always looked to produce commercial animals, as with your same with your cattle, but very much in the Texel breed as well, looking to produce rams that would go on and work for the commercial farmer and produce a prime lamb product.
Oh, totally. We still are. We're not obsessed by their heads. It's all about the commercial man who wants something that's a bit more mobile, bit more head up in the air. That, let's just say, goes to the commercial side and longevity.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
We also picked up on the conversation that we'd had previously about loose beer imp and how things have changed.
The last couple of years, we can see there's more of those boys are looking in our pen and buying it. I'd want to.
And Paul, you're down there in Devon and very much a representative of the Texel sheep in the southwest there, and you get a lot of local breeders there you're supplying to in the southwest. Is that your main market?
Yeah, but our best ones all come out of the area because you know, to make the extra money, they're a little bit more prudent in the southwest. There aren't many that will push on. So yes, we do sell so many in the southwest, but we travel them to Kelso, to Carlisle, Worcester, Bilf. So
I had a chat with Paul Phillips down there on the Herefordshire border, and Paul, again, you're another man that's very focused on what the commercial market needs.
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably about 85% of the Texels that are bred end up in the hands of the commercial man. And of course, one of the things that they're after is a sheep that performs under their situation and their circumstances that delivers them the best return on their investment of buying it. So yes, I've been very minded of trying to keep in touch with reality and what pays the bills. And so therefore that's, you know, focusing on the traits that matter to them. Things like natural fleshing, growth, prolificacy, good maternal, et cetera. So from my side of things, I'm less interested what the head looks like, and more interested about how it eats, tastes and grows.
And we've been talking about figures there, and I know you've been very much involved in that from a technical side as well, but how do you see that the figures influence the commercial trade?
Well, I think at the end of the day, if you look at the picture that there is out there, I mean, we're all in business, all for slightly different reasons. And ultimately, in order for you to be successful, you need to use data to help you make decisions. And that data might be as simple as looking at the weather forecast and deciding that you are going to go out and cut some grass, or you're going to go and check the moisture on your arable crops to make sure that they're ready to combine. So you're using data all the time. So I don't see why buying a sheep should be any different, because fundamentally it just helps people de-risk, and it helps people see through, in my opinion, the difference between breeding and feeding.
I spoke to Donald McPherson from the Hexall flock in the Scottish Borders, and Donald, you started out breeding commercial shearlings for the Kelso market, I think.
Kelso was our market at the time. That was all we knew. We've shared tips with yourself and Fred Murray and Jimmy Warnock, and we always went for good bodies and skins and functional. And it worked for the Kelso job. The Kelso job at that time, it wasn't so much the emphasis on size, it was more on shape at that stage.
Okay. And you had tried the lamb job already, though?
We tried the lamb job at the very start, and I made a backside of it. I turned up a day late for Lanark, thinking I'd just miss the show and just go the next day. But Gordon Gray took me aside and had a look at the lamb in the trailer, and took me for a cup of tea, and very nicely told me that, when I asked him, he very nicely told me that it just wasn't good enough and that I'd need to get my yows a bit better, which I did. I took on board, I sold the four yows that we had at that time, and I bought better ones from a dispersal in Lanark. And that helped a lot, actually.
Would you have been in the, because of course you're well known in the meat trade and the catering business nowadays, but you started very much in the meat trade. Would your emphasis, and you did a Nuffield as well, Donald, I remember, would your emphasis on the meat trade be something that, that guided you towards the commercial aspect of the Texel?
I'm not sure. I didn't have really much to do with the meat trade at that stage, Andy. That wasn't until 2000, really, that we started that. So I was just going for what we could sell. We had to make money. You know, in a rented farm, everything was strictly commercial, so we had to make money out of them. So the Kelso trade was steady and a good earner. If you did the job right, you could get on quite well in it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't oversupplied at that stage as well.
Sure. And you'd run, what, a number of ewes and just run the lambs commercially and just going for the shearling trade the following year. So you do it to a budget.
Completely. And it was all... We did AI a bit at that time, just to try and, because I couldn't afford to buy a good tip. So we AI'd a few ewes, but we're running like 130 pure ewes at that time. And believe it or not, we even lambed the ewe hogs at that stage, just to get the numbers, because it was a numbers game for us. We needed to get the numbers to sell the tips. And it suited, the shearling job suited. You know, we couldn't, there's no way you could sell a lamb out of a yow hog anyway, so. No.
And what sort of numbers of tups did you put into Kelso back then?
We'd be putting about 20 in, and then selling tips off the farm and locally as well. Sure. We'd put our 20 best ones there. Always a nice steady trade. You know, we could average, you know, 800. Mm-hmm. Up an apples, which was in those days was a good income for us.
Yeah.
Well, it helped.
Okay, and then a change, as I said, you mentioned you went into the catering business. You moved from Bowlesbury Hill, I think, and your whole farming enterprise changed, and you went down a much more commercial route there of the catering side of it there. And it was that a catalyst for you to change your focus on your Texel breeding as well?
It was necessary, in fact, because we sold. When we bought the small farm, we had to sell the Texels to help pay for the farm. So we sold all the adult portion and we only kept 8 ewe lambs. That was all we had left. So then we just built it up gradually from the 8 ewe lambs. Obviously, going to Kelso, you need a pen full. There's no point in going with two or three. So we started the lamb job then. And then... We've never been back to the shearlings.
I had a brief chat with Rob Laird at Camwell about the shearling market as well.
The shearling trade is a market that's only growing. It's getting bigger and bigger, and the commercial guys are not wanting the hassle of working with ram lambs now. And the trade's definitely there, and They're also they're very sought after. These stock shearling rams are getting very, very sellable now, far more so than they were 5 to 10 years ago. So I think that's possibly the direction that a lot of beetles will be heading down.
And Robert, of course, a lot of shearling rams going through Kelso, but am I right in thinking they can dress sheep at Kelso?
Yeah, well, there's about four Texel rings at Kelso, but they're not affiliated to the society, so it's not a society sale. So they are allowed to touch them up. But we've been in a fairly fortunate position as Texel breeders. We have now bred a sheep that just about hardly doesn't need any dressing at all, really. And what you see is what you get with a Texel.
Another well-established flock, the renowned for breeding commercial rams, are the Crear family from the Isle of Man. And Danny, the Isle of Man has its challenges. There's a very wet part of the country there. How much rainfall do you actually get per year?
We're over 80 inches.
And you run the farm very much commercially. Ballygloney flock has been in business for a long time.
1978, we started in the Texels.
Right at the beginning. And... So you sell a lot of commercial rams, always have been very much involved in the commercial side of it, not really in the pedigree world or not?
Yeah, we do a bit, little bit with the pedigree. We sell at one pedigree sale. We sell a small pen at the NSA sale at Bilf.
Okay.
And the rest of the stock is sold locally. Like, we stopped feeding about 10 years ago and went to a grass-based system. And the tups have a lot more longevity and they suit the clients better than the fed tups. Like.
and the Ballaglone and the Cooningale. There's two flocks there. Do they differ?
Yeah. No, they both run together, really, like, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you run a fairly big commercial outfit. How many ewes do you run altogether?
Quite a lot. Between the family, we run a lot of ewes. And, yeah, okay. we're sort of hill and upland farmers. We're more from lowland farmers. Like, sure. You know, we run a lot of hill sheep. Like, 2,500 hill ewes. Like, so.
How many?
2,500.
2,500, that's a big outfit. And your father would have been, in the early days, very much involved with Steve Williams as well. I think you guys used to work a little bit together with Tups.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, probably the most influential Tups that we've had in our flock would be Woolascott Rams.
What sort of numbers of Tups do you sell per year now than a Texel Tups?
They sell over 100 Tups, but mostly local, like, yeah.
And you have an on-farm sale, I think, in August.
Yeah, on-farm sale, like.
How would your shearlings, I mean, you say you run them grass-fed, with the, you know, you're obviously not chasing the heads there. What sort of, you're very much carcass-based.
Yeah, we're looking for, sheep that are structurally sound, really, that have a good mouth, good legs, and wedged the right way. There's too many of these modern sheep are wide at the front and narrow at the back, like, you know. We look for a good top, like, we don't like the, you know, dipping behind the shoulders or anything like that. We find that the sort of rams that we need, like, we've sort of, the rams that suit us really come out of Wales and the Welsh borders, really, like, so.
Okay.
We don't really go north to buy rams. We go into Wales to buy our stock rams. Like.
And what's your top trade in amongst the Tups?
I've had eight and a half a few years back, and about just before COVID, there I had an average of just over 2,000 for eight, like, which was a very healthy average.
And you said loyal customers; those rams would be going into breeders who are breeding breeding shearlings themselves, or are they going to commercial work?
Quite a bit of that, and we've got some very good commercial customers too that will pay over £1,000 for a ram, like.
And Danny and I got into a discussion about figures and EBVs. And
yeah, I think the figures are very useful, actually. Like, and one of the best things I think in the figures is the positive or negative fat. Or try to buy a ram with positive fat. Yeah. You find that if you use rams that are positive fat, your grass-fed shearlings fill up nicely. Like, if, you know, the negative fat in the Texels is going to be a problem if they don't watch themselves, because they'll find a lot of the people that are using the rams commercially are finding the lambs quite hard to finish, and they can't finish unless they're fed hard feed. Whereas the rams that have got the genetics that's got the positive fat will flesh off grass and forage a lot easier.
I spoke to Steve Smith from the Pen Park flock in Wales about the characteristics that he looks for in a Texel sheep, both pedigree and commercial. Steve, when you're out judging things like the Royal Welsh and the Royal Highland thing, and I think you've judged the national show as well, would you please everybody?
No, I please myself. I know, as a commercial farmer, that we have got to keep those commercial characteristics. I like a nice head. I don't like a big lumpy head. I like a sharp. Mm. Because if you're selling Texel lambs out of a mule, they need to look like a Texel.
Okay.
So I've always been for a good nose end, a good deep jaw, sharp ears, not big lumpy ears. Texel's ears need to be at 10 to 2. And they need a leg in each corner.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that all the way through. White hair is nice, and it's, if you're in a flyed environment, it saves from fly. But I quite like a bit of blue head, and it seems to go with carcass. And we're moving away. I see quite a lot in the Royal Welsh this time, a lot of Kempy sheep, bigger sheep, much heavier. But I believe that we can, those square sheep, good square back end, and their backside should be like a dartboard with a tail in the middle.
Another facet to the great Texel breed over the last 50 years in the UK, of course, is the export market, something that's dried up a little bit since Brexit, but been a great source of revenue and a great source of publicity for the Texel breed around the world. I chatted with Gordon Gray about his involvement in the export market, particularly the semen and embryos as well.
Just prior to me being chairman, we had quite a bit of a few years of involvement in Brazil, South America anyway. And that has led to quite a few contacts going back and forward and sheep and quite a bit of semen nowadays. So that's been fairly good. But the European market was also very good for our Texels. You know, Switzerland took a lot of them, France, Germany, Belgium, Holland. They were keen to get some UK genetics, and it certainly is a miss. And Southern Ireland seems to be cleaning up that market at the moment because it can go direct from there into Europe.
I spoke to Texel breeder and past chairman Keith Campbell at the Royal Highland Show just soon after he'd managed to scoop the championship at the 2024 Royal Highland Show. There's a little bit of background noise in this one, but Keith and I again got around to talking about the export trade. During your time with the breed, you got to travel a little bit as well, Keith, I think.
Yeah, I got to judge in Canada at the Toronto Winter Fair, and then, but the real highlight was getting over to South America twice. And an inward mission of trying to get embryos and semen into Brazil. Brazil had brought Texels in at exactly the same time as they did in the UK, and they were chasing a similar sort of genetics. And so it was there was a lot of work went on in the background to get to, there was a lot of work in the background to try and get embryos and semen into Brazil. And that has actually went on to the British Genetics has actually had a lot of supreme champions out there, and it's an amazing country. We actually met a meat buyer who was looking for 2,400 lambs a week for restaurants in São Paulo, and then we actually managed to speak to some of the Uruguayans. And we managed to get sheep into there as well, embryos into there as well. So it did take 3 years to get them in, but it was well worth it in the long run.
And the export trade has been very good to the Texel breed in the UK, hasn't it?
Yes, it has been. Yes, yeah. We've been doing a wee bit ourselves as well. But anything we can do to help the breed, regardless where it is, I think it's good. It's good for the overall of the breed worldwide.
Alistair Galt from the Fawkins flock in Northern Ireland talks to me about how the export trade works over there.
Yeah, it's working both ways. We're struggling to get sheep in from UK, but the European market has opened up quite a bit for us.
With regards to the Brexit affecting your sheep, because you're allowed to bring sheep into the UK, but you can't get them back out. Is that how it works?
Yeah, any sheep that we bring over to sales has to stand for 6 months on mainland GB to get back home again,
okay,
according to the Brexit rules. And obviously the scrapie requirements and everything else, the double R's are scrapie monitored before they come in. So we're basically classified as Europe, the same as Southern Ireland over here, and that's the big problem. There's been no actual export centre for semen and embryos with us. I'm not sure if it's up and running, but it will be shortly over here. So that might open up a few more avenues for us. But hopefully that's something to come in the future. If we had wanted to do that in the past, we'd have had to send the sheep over to Edinburgh or Malvern. So now I'm not just sure if it's up and going yet, but it won't be long. So looking into, you know, South America and stuff as well. So
is the live Texel market from Northern Ireland into mainland Europe booming now?
Yeah, not so much as yet. There's a few Texels going. There's bits and pieces, but not any amount. You know?
Okay.
Switzerland's taken some, but it comes and goes. You get new men come in over there, and they come in and take some, and then they supply the other people over there. So it's,
is that the case that you're finding, Robert?
In Belgium and Holland, there's they call themselves the English Texel breeders. So they actually have a group of about 17 or 18 breeders who are specialised in breeding big, strong Texels compared with the Dutch type. Mm-hmm. And they're very forward-thinking, those guys, and they're really up-to-date with the genetics of this country.
Alan Clark, Garn Gower has been another Texel flock that shifted a lot of stock around the world.
Yeah, we have five markets we've exported to a fair bit of Europe without going in and listing the countries. It's, you know, a lot of the usual ones. Southern Ireland has been a great market up until now. Kind of, unfortunately, lost a lot of the live market now due to the blue tongue restrictions. Hopefully they can sort themselves out in the not too distant future. And then the semen exports, and we've also exported some embryos pretty much exclusively to South America, which has been exciting. It's good to be a part of it, and there's some great results coming out of that.
And you said you've shifted some embryos overseas there. Have you been flushing you specifically for that market?
There's about three separate years we've went and we've dabbled in embryos targeted at the export market with mixed success, I would say. We get kind of caught with some of the original lot, but last two goes have been a little better, but still yet to make our fortune at the export embryos. Semen seems like a more reliable sort of export market at the moment. Primarily South America for me. I know some of the other breeders have been getting away to North America and such like, and even Central America, but South America's been my sort of hotspot for semen anyway.
Have you been and had to travel around there, none?
I was fortunate enough to get, I got away through the Texel Society and went out to Ex Pointer in Porto Alegre, and that must be 14 years ago. I did manage to get the chance to go out there, and it was a fantastic trip. I'd love to go back, even out to Uruguay, Paraguay and that as well. As you know, just numbers that they're working with out there, and no, it would be a real interesting trip to go back again.
And social media, of course, has been a great tool for yourself and for everybody else to gain that export contact.
It is. It's massive. These guys are all keeping tabs on what's happening over here, and they're seeing, you know, they're wanting to use the big name tops now. Initially, they would, you know, be happy to use a ram or something well bred, but now they're really looking to use, you know, high price tops.
And some of the Uruguayan boys have been over just recently. Did they get to come and see you? I know they were seeing other people.
Yeah, we had Uruguayans, Paraguayans. There was some Brazilians within the trip. There was Dutch guys here at the same time as a national show at Carlisle. So, no, it's good. It's a pleasure to show people around your stock.
Finally, in this episode, we go on to talk about some of the functionality of the Texel Sheep Society over the years. And one of those important roles was when the Society set up the Basco database there. And I speak to Keith Campbell because it was on his watch when the database got started.
So it was just after foot and mouth. And we managed to speak to a couple of the breed societies, one being the Limousine and one being the Suffolks, to see if we could get one system for birth notifying and registrations. It was also the 30th anniversary, just after the 30th anniversary, which had been quite a lot of new things had come out and discussions. And the change was good. It meant that the breed societies were starting to work together as opposed to working against one another. This was not anything to do with actual breeding. It was all to do with administration and keeping their running costs down. So, and it's proved to be an unbelievable success with a bit of modification.
And that was called the Basco system back then, wasn't it?
Basco, yeah.
I'm going to ask you what it stands for now.
Pass.
Beef and sheep something, I think.
That's exactly what it was.
I remember you having a big launch party with it, and it was innovative at the time, wasn't it? You went in front of the other people.
Yes, and we launched it in the London Eye.
That's right.
And we travelled to London. We got all the press involved. We got a few carriages on the big wheel, and we were at the very top. That was when we announced it. There was no social media or anything at that time. So we had to do everything by word of mouth and a bit of publicity out in the street.
Then more recently, the Basco system got replaced almost seamlessly by the iTexel database. And again, I spoke to Paul Phillips, who was one of those involved with the iTexel database development.
Yes, I think a lot of breeders are unaware of the journey that the society's been on, because obviously Basco was something that was set up back in the day as the beef and sheep company. And ultimately, it then became a situation where you had something that was aging. It was very good in its day, but of course, everything has a time to live. So we ended up with a platform that, whilst it was quite feature rich, it couldn't match the scale of the ambition that Texel had in that. So it was time to look at doing something different. And that work really started in sort of 2017, 2018. I guess to put it simply, it was analog and we wanted to go digital. So what we ended up doing was working with an organization that we chose very carefully, who were based in New Zealand, to build that for us. And yes, that was a project I was involved with, along with a good number of other people, because obviously it needs a good team to make a successful product. So what we had to do was come up with a very good vision of where we thought iTexel could be driven to. That also included and encompassed starting to harness things, or had the capability to harness things like publishing of genomic information, plus more information. And obviously this year in sale catalogues, we've got some of the single marker things that we can now start to report on, like microphthalmia, scrapie, et cetera, and obviously as the years roll by, there's more capabilities that can be built in too. But having a good platform on which to build was something that was very important. And iTexel had to be created to do that and to fulfill that vision. And as one of the projects that's probably one of the largest ones financially in the history of the society, it was really good to be involved in that, but a huge responsibility because of the use of member funds in making sure it delivered.
And one thing that may be quite unique about the iTexel database is that anybody can log in there without member information and see all that Texel data there right in front of them. Was that a conscious decision that was made for that to happen?
So yes, I mean, having that information available in a way that it could be viewed anywhere in the world at any time of the day or night was very much a design decision that was taken up front.
I've been involved in IT development myself, and the iTexel database appears to be simple, but simple isn't always easy to achieve, is it?
And you're also looking to, whether it be add lambs, enter sales, etc., it's a very logical process that you go through. And obviously when you create something simple, that's where the complexity starts, because there's a lot of decisions that drive that simplicity. But you also have to make sure that there are rules too in place, so the society bylaws, etc., get picked up all the way through in a way that doesn't appear to be overarching, but also, you know, supports the governance that the society needs to run by. It is designed to do what it does, and I think it does it very well.
So with all those aspects of the great Texel breed over the 50 years, it's great to see that they're dominating in the commercial sheep ram trade and the export trade going all around the world, and that the Breed Society has such modern forward technology and functionality there that makes the Texel breed such a great breed that it's become. And as mentioned previously, the British Texel Sheep Society is 50 years old this year. And the British Texel Sheep Society are publishing a history book, the history of the Texel for the last 50 years. They're in the UK, and that's been co-authored by myself and Jonathan Long, and should be available in early November. And talking of early November, the British Texel Sheep Society are hosting a social weekend to celebrate their birthday, and that takes place on Friday the 15th through to Sunday the 17th of November in Chester. And tickets are available if they're not all sold out from the British Texel Society. So we look forward to seeing everybody there. So I've been your host, Andy Frazier, and thanks very much for tuning in to the third episode of the British Texel Sheep Society's podcast.